So now, as a resident and being in the very beginning, and as you walk around and what you see, how do you feel about this?
I'm really proud of the whole property. It just makes me feel good to walk into it. Whenever anyone else sees it, they have so much positive reaction. It just makes me feel very lucky. And I know I went through a lot of hard stuff back then, and that's gone now. It's really good.
So there's no place you go and think, oh, I wish this had been done differently, or we...
No, we've had so much opportunity to do things how we wanted to have it done.
What gives you pleasure?
I feel very much the same as Chris does. And the other thing is that people have added to it. I mean, we've got things like the wall,
the story wall,
the mural, and that was added. We've got people have decorated, people... it's not just the people who originally moved in. People have joined into making it a lovely place. And walking in the front gate off Sturt Street, first you see what people in that front building have got on their balconies facing the street, and that's varied and interesting. And then you walk in and you're walking past the story wall, and then you just walk in, and I always look up because there are things growing on the edge of the roof, sort of growing over from the roof garden, and you look up and you look around, and there's green, and as you come in on a hot day the temperature drops and you look at the green and you think, oh, isn't this nice?
So it's a lot of pleasure now for
it's
you,
a lot
and
of
it's
pleasure.
Yeah. I'm sort of thinking we can kind of, you know, throw in anything. We've sort of done the official questions. I mean, there are other ones, but
well,
Simon,
I'm,
what else?
I'm
do you
curious
want
to know a little bit more about right back where the building started, because the very first home to be built was what we call, or was called at the time, the Roman Hut, because
yeah.
it was. For Roman,
that's right.
To live in.
No, I wasn't around at that point.
No, but you probably heard stories
I've
of that and would
stories.
Have seen some of the straw bale building that followed that, I think,
yeah.
in the next stage. So, as I understand, there was quite a lot of community participation outside of the people who were going to live here in the straw bale building, and that was a deliberate arrangement. The story I've heard is that the couple who came over from Sydney, whose business was straw bales and who were called Huff and Puff Constructions, yes, harking back to the Three Little Pigs, of course. But their straw bales have not blown down despite some quite strong winds at times. I've heard that the that quite a lot of people came along to learn how to do straw bale building, and this couple who knew ran it as a sort of workshop where people could contribute by helping build the building and learning at the same time.
I think that's pretty well a general principle of building straw bales, that it comes along with a group of people who are always interested and always want to learn. So that's a little bit of a workforce that seems to follow.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
So there's a curiosity factor, I suppose, because it's unusual, but also it is harking back to an older, simpler way of building with local materials, which...
And getting people involved.
Yeah.
And getting people involved, like barn raising.
One of the things to remember if you're thinking of doing something like that is that they get a thing really well started.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do the finishing.
That's a good...
You have to have other people who are willing to do the finishing.
So they do it for the fun bit. Oh, that's fun.
Well, they're doing the sort of basic straw baling, but they're not doing all the...
Wiring, plumbing.
Wiring, the plumbing and the...
The last touches.
The finishing, the plastering, the finishing.
So two questions there. One is, when the Romans was the beginning, the whole development had been planned, right? And we'll give this...
No.
No.
I think probably when Romans was done, I suspect they weren't sure what they were going, what else they were going to do. The next bit they did was the townhouse block. And when they'd finished Romans, they thought, oh, we're clever, we can actually do some building. So this is when they set up the building company. And the building company was in charge of doing the, certainly doing the townhouse block. Right. And so
if the Roman hadn't gone well, it might not have continued. Is that what you're saying?
They'd have done something else. They'd have worked out some other way of doing it, I think. It was because they felt pretty chuffed with how they'd done the Roman one, that they decided to keep going in the way they were doing it. And then, you know, they planned. But when I came in, that was... the townhouses were built. On Russell Street, the plan was that there was going to be a community house. There was going to be six apartments here, as there are, but on each end of them, there was going to be a townhouse. Something was going to happen down the front. Initially, they even thought, well, maybe have, some really nice shopping or sort of community-oriented shops or something with residences above them. I mean, they really didn't.
So it really was experimental.
So
we'll try that. Oh, that works. We'll keep.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why we ended up with 13 apartments down the front was that that was more likely to pay for what was already being built than, and certainly if you were going to do anything commercial, it was going to be a lot more expensive because commercial building regulations are fancier and the whole thing just becomes very difficult. So that's one of the reasons why that became residential. And, you know, so... those plans were actually Paul and Cherie, basically.
And that also.
But whichever hat they decided they were wearing at the time.
Does that also explain why the Urban Ecology Office, as it was for many years, was always written down as a display room rather than an office? Because there was no hint of a commercial involvement there, which might have changed the requirements.
I think that's right.
Yes.
Interesting.
And of course it has been a display room. Mm. Yes.
Mm. How long, does anyone know how long it took to do Romans as an experiment?
I'm sure people do, but I don't.
Mm. Mm. Oh, I'm curious, off the record, how to be Romans. How did he get to get the first one?
Oh, I think he was in there right at the beginning. Oh, yeah, I think so. Mm. And the people who were in there, he was in there at the beginning, and the people who first were moving into the townhouses were there at the beginning. You'd have to ask Roman or ask someone, or ask Michael probably remembers.
Ah, he's another early one.
Oh, Michael was one of the originals.
Joan.
There was Roman, there was... Terry.
And Beverly, as it was to be, yes.
Yeah, that's right, only Beverly died, which is why that house is smaller and still big.
Michael
and Joan.
Donald, they didn't
come. No, Donald was later.
Donald and Phyllis.
Donald and Phyllis came later. That was going to be Matt Fisher's. There was a family, that was going to be a family home for Matt Fisher, but I think he lost his job at that point, and I think my suspicion is also it was looking as if it was going to cost more than they had originally supposed, and so they sort of said, no, sorry, we can't do it, which is why we had it on our books to sell.
Any other, Simon? I don't know if you want to talk about the educational potential of Christie Walk and whether Paul and Cherie ever had that in mind.
I think so.
I think it was very much in mind, in the sense that it's in, by Paul and others, it's always been described as a demonstration site.
That'd be right, yeah.
So, and I, in fact, thanks to Effie, I have Paul's book by my bedside at the moment. So I'm delving into some of that background. But yes, it was clearly intended to be a place that others would come and see and learn, a working example of eco-city rather than just a theory of eco-city. And I think that is one of the, if not the really brilliant thing about Christy Walk, has been ever since I first came here, that it is exactly that, and it attracts and interests a lot of people because of that. The comment, though, that we hear from time to time, and I'm sure Effie's heard her share of this, is that how come there aren't a whole lot more Christy Walks? Because Paul Downton did, he used to call this a fractal, a small piece of eco-city within the city of Adelaide, which could be replicated in, you know, in variants, and gradually increase in size the amount of eco-city that existed within the city of Adelaide. And while we see some effects of Christy Walk's influence, I think, I'm not aware of anyone trying to replicate something quite like Christy Walk in the city.
No.
That was always a big part of it. In fact, a critical part of it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Paul's very strong feeling and thesis really was that the city created problems.
The city can save the world.
Yes, and so turn it around, make the city work better, and then it can save the world, as you say. And to get back to what you said about how it was designing a piece of city to work for people and also for the environment, for people's health and well-being, and the sense of community. To me, those two things are also strongly linked. You know, we tend to talk of them as two separate things, but really,
yeah.
They're not, are they? Because having the natural environment around us is part of our well-being.
That's right.
It's a very, very strong part of it to me. So, you know, I think we all delight in the bird life here and the butterflies and the other things that you've photographed over the years.
So what's the answer to that question? Why aren't there more?
Why aren't there more?
Well, I think, for some reason, I do think you'd need to get developers really interested in it, because, you know, thinking about things like how finances work and stuff like that, if there are no developers who are interested in it, makes it almost impossible.
Yes.
So what we're hoping is all the school kids that come through, maybe some of them will be a developer.
They'll grow up to be developers and build them.
Well, I think too, one of the key things is there was this idealism that got this going and this commitment. And you would need that again, really, because you're going to run into issues. You know, it will.
Yeah.
And people to keep that going. Mm.
Some things would be a little bit easier. One of the things that I do remember, when you're talking about Paul and Cherie and who made what decisions, one of the things I do remember is how adamant Cherie was that all the materials should be as sort of clean and green. I mean, not just green, but no nasty gases. And I mean, she was very, very clear about looking for the best possible materials, including floor coverings and benchtop laminates and all those
which
things.
Is a huge commitment to cut corners.
Oh,
and
yes.
So,
well, I think she actually, and also rather enjoyed discovering all these things.
So one of the ways I've summed up the approach to building Christie Walk, or designing and building it, on and to visitors, has been, and I'm interested to see whether you feel this rings true, that it was designed up to a standard, built up to a standard rather than down to a price.
Absolutely. Yes.
Where your average builder and developer tend to put in the minimum requirement for many things because it saves money.
And that's where the idealists come into it.
And said, but if we put a bit more money into it, a bit more material into this or that, the result will actually be way better. And I've also heard, and I wonder if this goes back or if it's something was added later as an idea, but I've heard that part of the thought was to design for buildings that would last up to 100 years.
Oh, yes.
That was clear, was it?
Oh, yeah, that was part of the original plan. Oh, yes.
Okay. Oh, that's good to hear.
Yes, that was part of my original understanding anyway when I came in, that was what Paul was designing.
Yes. Yeah. And in a decade now where we're seeing so many high-rise buildings, particularly residential in other cities, literally crumbling through bad building.
Put them up in a couple of days and a couple of weeks later they fall over.
Yes.
There's a very big, very expensive, huge apartment block in San Francisco, right in the heart of San Francisco, and it's got this lean. One gay couple have sold. They sold for $3 million. They paid $6 million. They got out. They're going to have to put the whole, and it's huge. It just went up, you know. So it's lovely to hear 100 years.
So a question that I have is, when you look back on how the feeling was and the mix of people and their ideas about sustainable living and so on, that were pretty much at the start as far as when you first came in, Chris, do you feel that's watered down in any significant way since then? Do you feel encouraged by the level of thinking and action and sustainability that does still exist? How do you feel about
that? I feel happy with it, because actually I sort of first came in, I didn't have the same principles as I developed as I went along.
Oh, really?
You know, I learned as I went along.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. As I think I may have said to someone, I first got involved with the Halifax project because I wanted somewhere to live in the city, because I was living in the city in a two-storey house. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that forever, so I wanted somewhere to live in the city. I'd like interesting neighbours, maybe, but that wasn't top of the list. The top of the list was no stairs. My lift's fine or whatever, but no stairs. Somewhere they would have to be willing to take two cats, and would have to be somewhere where I could grow my annual hyacinth.
Yeah, and
those
and,
were my requests.
And possibly get to the central market.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And that is the central market.
And the cellar. Yes.
And the cellar. You're right.
Need a place for your wine.
Place for my wine. Absolutely.
A few criteria. So we got a few more minutes to finish off, and I'm done. Simon, is there any other?
I think to get back to the educational aspect, to me it's very gratifying that there is so much ongoing and persistent interest in bringing students of all ages and levels here, because now one of the developments in education in Australia since Christie Walk was begun is that sustainability is now a topic in the curriculum at every single level, at every kind of educational institution, which I find very encouraging.
Well, I also like what Effie said. She's she learnt a lot. And to me, it seems like this is a very growing, developing, continues to grow as a community. And, you know, just the awareness, for example, of the recycling. It's a lot more now than it was in the very beginning, and we're still learning, and you know, we're staying current and we're committed to those principles.
So part of that, and this is a question that I wanted to ask you, is that there is now, and has been for some time at least, what we call the Green Fund, which has been built up as a section of the funds which the primary corporation manages, and which is specifically earmarked for more green projects that develop Christie Walk into the future. Was that something that started quite early?
Yeah, fairly early, because it started when we were working out what we were going to do with the money from the photovoltaics on the front building.
Right.
The photovoltaics on the front building were built with a grant from the Commonwealth Government. You probably don't even know about Libs on the Roof. You don't know that we were visited by John Howard.
Tell me about Libs on the Roof. What's the story?
This is because the Commonwealth gave us some money to put up the photovoltaics, and at some stage, I think it was the City of Adelaide or some worthy organisation was wanting to get some more money out of the Commonwealth Government, which at that stage was led by John Howard, and they sort of invited them over to South Australia, invited a group of people, including John Howard, over to South Australia, and they asked, could they bring him in here and let him see Christie Walk? And whoever was asked, it wasn't me, but whoever was asked said, yeah, I suppose so. So John Howard came and visited Christie Walk, and people took him up on the roof and saw the roof garden, all these impressive things, you know. And the reason why I said Libs on the Roof is that somebody took a photograph which labelled Libs on the Roof.
that may well be in one of the early urban ecology magazines. I'll have to check that out. Yes.
So somebody must have just had the bright idea when we started getting money from photovoltaics, saying, wouldn't it be good to earmark this for something or other? So.
And there is talk long term about electric cars and things like that.
The Green Fund. Yeah. Well, I think obviously the agreement was early on that the electricity would not just go. I mean, it's used in that building, but that the amount that building would pay the primary corporation. It's clear in the scheme description that the power from that is the property of the primary corporation.
As well as the one on top of garden apartments.
And ours, which is a later one, is also was actually used, the Green Fund was used to buy that. And so, and I think we just sat around one AGM and said, well, what should we do with that? And somebody said, let's put it in a fund for green projects.
The Green Fund.
And the Green Fund. And we actually agree to that every year. So if somebody got really impressed with something else that they wanted that wasn't green, they just have to talk everybody into removing it and doing away with the Green Fund.
Well, it's just helped to buy the first Tesla battery to store power from that roof, which is working very beautifully and may well be the first of several.
Yes.
It's great. I think it's a wonderful idea, the Green Fund, and it's great to see it actually being used for those kinds of purposes.
Sort of thing. Yeah, well, and there again, you see, you've got people. Every now and then you get the right sort of person on the job because, Brian Loughlin really knows
what he's doing,
knows how to spend green money on making more green things.
Yep. Has a green thumb, as you might say, in a tech sense, unlike you who have it in a garden sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, well, thank you. I think anything else that you want to...
Many good thoughts. Mm. I think we've covered quite a lot, and Effie, we may well come back to you with questions at another time, but thank you so much for agreeing to do this, delve into your memories, and Chris and Kay for your part in it as well, because I think it's been a terrific idea, and it may well lead to us doing it with some other people.
Mm. Yeah. Roman would be one, and Michael. But what I liked, I had a thought with you introducing it, and that it could be a one-off radio program, and some of the things Effie said, and take snippets of the Paul Downton interview that said nicely. You know, it could, if anyone wanted to do it. But thank you, Effie, Simon, Chris. It's lots and lots of good information.
It's been interesting thinking back on some of those things too.
Yeah, and thank you, Simon. It's your idea, and UEA, you know, who knows what'll happen.